You may not have realized it yet, but the USC and UCLA classes of 2024 are Big Ten recruiting classes. So let's learn more about how those West Coast schools operate.
You are Locked On Big Ten, your daily podcast on the Big Ten Conference. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, you're listening into Locked On Big Ten, the place where you can get everything you need to know about the conference every day of the week. I'm your host, Nate Dickinson. Our show today is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the number one sportsbook in America. Make every moment more, and don't miss the chance to be at your first no-sweat first bet of up to $1,000 in bonus bets back when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Coming up on today's program, the Gavitt Games schedule has been announced for the upcoming winter. I'll give you all of my thoughts on the biggest and best matchups between the Big Ten and the Big East coming up on the hardwood. But first, we're going to talk gridiron and the future of the Big Ten with Brian Smith. USC and UCLA are now recruiting players to be Big Ten athletes in the class of 2024. So I asked Brian a little bit more on how we can evaluate how these schools recruit, what they are normally good at, and where we can see some recruiting battles between some new conference rivals as these two schools enter the fold. That's coming up right here, right now on Locked On Big Ten as we start up with Brian Smith, our new football recruiting expert. You're tuned into Locked On Big Ten, everything you need to know about the conference every day of the week. I am Nate Dickinson. We are joined by our new football recruiting expert here at Locked On, Brian Smith. Had him on here last week, getting you back in to chat more. And I want to talk here, Brian, about the recruiting classes for USC and UCLA, because we were having a conversation in our meeting with Locked On hosts last week and realized that this recruiting class for football and basketball too are technically for those two schools Big Ten recruiting classes. They are going to be Big Ten athletes when they arrive to campus. So it's time for us to start looking a little more closely into those two schools. And before I get into just kind of what adding them means for recruiting in the conference as a whole, I do want to ask you first, just give me some of the names that we need to know if you're a Big Ten fan who has been maybe forgetting that you need to keep track of these schools now.
Well, this fall, just as a prelude, the 23 class, Dante Moore, the quarterback, who ironically is from Detroit. So UCLA already dipped into that area. And then Zachariah Branch is from Bishop Gorman out in Las Vegas, arguably the best receiver in the country. He might even start for USC this year. You get a chance to see them and what they can do, but you're talking about two elite players. They could have been the two best players in the country. So UCLA and USC are going to have talent coming in. It's not shocking. It's the speed, I think, that you're going to see from California. That's always been the big deal in the Rose Bowl, right? Like when they win against the Big Ten, it's been speed. Branch is as fast as it gets. And those are the kinds of kids that Chip Kelly is going to recruit at UCLA too. So he's always prioritized track kids. You're going to see that. Looking at the 24 classes, they're not quite as active as some of the other schools. Like Michigan is killing it on the recruiting trail in the Big Ten. They might have the top class in the country right now. Those two schools out west have prioritized the transfer portal a little bit more, trying to get more experienced players. So I'm curious to see what they get in the month of June once the visits get rolling. But they're just getting started with their 24 classes.
You mentioned some of the things that those schools like to prioritize. Go a little bit more in depth on that, because where we're in the Big Ten, you pretty much know how each school is going to recruit if you've been following this conference or have a team in it for a while. But if you're adding these new teams in, you may not be as familiar. So where are the places that these teams specialize, prioritize when they're on the recruiting trail right now? And then later we'll get into how that may change now going to the Big Ten.
USC is arguably the most interesting study in the country. Keep in mind, Lincoln Riley was at the University of Oklahoma as the head coach. Prior to that, he was the offense coordinator there. You're talking about a guy that's got deep roots in Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, and recruiting that area in general. So when he came to USC this past year, they landed some studs out of Texas. You know, it's about relationships in any line of business. They've done very well there. So I expect to see their roster always carry 5 to 10 Texans at the very least. Additionally, UCLA, that's a program. I mean, it's a great institution. They can go nationally as well. Chip Kelly's still probably going to recruit more Seattle to Phoenix, but they'll dip into some other states as well. I think they're the one that's more curious because, as you pointed out, what's long-term, UCLA needs to do better with defensive recruiting in particular. I expect to see them hit Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland. You're going to go to Northwestern. You're going to go to the Big House. You're going to go to the big, to the Shoe, et cetera. Your coaches are going to be on the road. Look for them to try to steal some of the defensive players in particular, maybe some of the linemen. Midwest has always been good for offensive and defensive linemen, big guys up front. I think that's what they're going to do. But for right now, priority has been on the West Coast for the Bruins.
How much do you think each side, these West Coast teams and current Big Ten teams, could benefit from being able to add these other markets into the conference? Like you mentioned, UCLA going into Chicago. How realistic is it that that could actually really help a recruiting class or help you get a recruit from the Midwest just being the Big Ten? And on the other side, can these Big Ten teams now legitimately, realistically go after some of these California kids that they wouldn't normally have been able to?
I think it's going to be a swap. Again, UCLA academically, it's not going to be hard to sell to parents. Obviously, the weather in Pasadena and that area where they're playing the Rose Bowl, it's the campus is beautiful. It's not hard to sell that. And especially when you're trying to call a kid that lives in Minneapolis or Detroit and you're calling them in December, right before signing day, and they're coming down to a decision, you can say, well, the weather here right now is 65 and sunny. So that's an advantage. But at the same time, the Big Ten schools, Ohio State and Michigan in particular, have always plucked one or two kids, it seems like, on a consistent basis out of California. Your question, though, is interesting. Can Minnesota, Iowa, Northwestern, some of the schools that aren't as traditionally successful getting the big-time players out of California because they're going to go out there more now, can they be more noticeable to those kids? I think yes. They just have to pick their spots, especially with like a private school kid. California's full of talented players that go to Catholic schools and prep schools. Northwestern's going to be able to go into one of those schools and find a kid that maybe USC doesn't want, but that's a good football player. So yeah, I think they can. Wisconsin, another top school, they're very successful on the recruiting trail. They need more speed. California's got plenty of skilled players. They might take some three-star out there, but he's a heck of a player, and 2 years later, he's starting for the Badgers. So you're going to see a little trade-off between the two sides.
Where do you see there being recruiting battles now brewing between these sides that may normally have not been there because people are going into uncharted territories or reaching out into recruiting areas that they normally hadn't?
The three cities that will get the most bang for your buck are not going to be surprising. Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland. Those are going to be the three landing spots more often than not for planes when coaches come into the Midwest to recruit anyway, USC, UCLA, or otherwise. So you're going to put your money with where you touch down. Plus, those areas are always good with football, too. Again, Dante Moore played at King High School in Detroit. He was, my opinion, the best player in the country last year. He signed with UCLA. That's a player that if you can get one there and he does well, and I expect him to be the starter by the end of the year for UCLA, he is a special, special talent. That's going to grab some attention, and it kind of helps some of the Pac-12 schools. But then it comes across the other way, too. So O-line, D-line, I think will be the battles that will be the most noticeable early on because the Big Ten has them in the Midwest region. But out West, I expect it to be more skill-driven. Even Ohio State, I mean, they've always recruited Californians for skill players, running backs, receivers, et cetera. That's not going to change. But you'll see a little bit more butting of heads just because they're always physically in each other's backyards playing each other. 5 years from now, this is going to be old hat. We won't even be talking about it. But it's definitely going to happen. And you'll see a kid with two Big Ten visits out West and maybe Wisconsin and Michigan from a local kid too. So it's going to be interesting.
Remind us real quickly, Brian, if USC and UCLA were in these conferences now, in the Big Ten right now, where would their classes year to year be ranking relative to everybody else about?
USC would be top four pretty much every year. But again, with the transfer portal era that we're in, that's subjective because are you talking about the totality of the players you bring in or just high school recruits? Because they had like the top of their board last year, they're like the top five kids they got were good as anybody, but they had a pretty big drop off. But the kids that they're getting in the transfer portal make up for it. So their roster And I mean, it's crazy how it turns over at USC as much, if not more than anybody, is pretty volatile, but it's very talented at the high end level. Like their starting group is really, really good. They need more depth. UCLA, on the other hand, hasn't recruited high school as well. They got more, but according to 247, they didn't even have a player in the top 300 after him. So that was very bizarre. They need to up their recruiting. I would say they'd be more middle of the pack in the Big Ten. USC would be top four.
All right, Brian Smith giving us a really good stuff on the insight into what UCLA and USC do in their recruiting trails. We'll, of course, have you on again soon as things are starting to gear up here. You were talking right before we went on about how busy things are getting for you. So we'll let you go now. And be sure to take advantage of any time we can get with you soon. Thank you again, Brian, for talking to us here on Locked On Big Ten.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks again to Brian Smith for joining us here on Locked On Big Ten. We'll be sure to have him on again soon, as I know you guys love that recruiting stuff in the middle of the summer. Before we get to any of that, though, we're going to talk Gavitt Games in just a minute. But first, it's time to make a break right now to FanDuel for the NBA playoffs. Because right now, new customers can get a no-sweat first bet of up to $1,000. That's $1,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. You can bet on anything at FanDuel. NBA playoffs are, of course, in full swing. You bet on the Heat to take down the Celtics or bet a future on the NBA Finals winner. Bet props on every game. Bet all sorts of lines for futures in NCAA football or basketball, too. And there are plenty of Big Ten teams to take in either of those regards. You can do it all over at FanDuel.com and get your no-sweat first bet by heading to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. It's FanDuel.com/LockedOn to get that bet and any other that you need in. But most importantly, to get that no-sweat first bet where you can get up to $1,000 back in bonus bets just for signing up with us here at Locked On. It's FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. Let's talk basketball, Big Ten basketball, Big East basketball, as once again the Gavitt Games will take place this November, pitting Big Ten teams against Big East teams. Not the biggest of Big Ten challenges that we will have here, but with the uncertainty, of course, of the ACC Big Ten Challenge's future, this is what we have right now, Big East and Big Ten, and some really good matchups to tell you about as well. I've got my eye on, honestly, just about all of them, but I have different reasons for each one. So I've made a few different little categories that I just thought up of myself, and I think it gives you a good idea of at least what I'm expecting when I see all these games on the schedule. First up, as we go top to bottom, I got most hyped game on the schedule, and this one's a no-brainer. Michigan Wolverines facing off against St. John's in Madison Square Garden. Now, this is more than just Michigan against St. John's, because to be quite honest, in recent years, these two teams have not necessarily lived up to their historical success. However, you've got yourself one of the biggest spotlights in the early season here in MSG and Rick Pitino over at St. John's. He takes over that team, his first real test back on the big stage against Juwan Howard's Michigan Wolverines in a school with plenty of name power on its own in the Michigan Wolverines. This is going to be the most hyped up matchup of this Gavitt Games. It's not the best game. We'll get to those later on. But as far as what people are going to be talking about going into it, it's Rick Pitino back on the biggest stage in basketball in Madison Square Garden and reunited to the Power Five by coming back to St. John's from Iona and getting himself back into the national stage. This, his first chance to really reintroduce himself to the college basketball world against the Michigan Wolverines. I don't know if it's going to be a good game. I don't know if either of those teams are going to be super good teams. But I know that people are going to be wanting to watch that game as it's one of their first chances to get to see Pitino again with a Big East school and leading a Power 5 team. A lot of people are, of course, excited for him to get back into the thick of things in college basketball. And the Big Ten gets a taste of it early in the Gavitt Games. Most fun game to watch. I've got Butler against Michigan State. For a couple of reasons, and there's a couple of games that I thought were worthy of this kind of recognition. But Butler, Michigan State, I think you've got a little bit of a combination of everything that you want to see out of an early season basketball game. You've got a team that's supposed to be really good, like top five in Michigan State, but a team that won't necessarily be super well tested in there. You've got a team that, to be quite frank, everybody likes. Everybody likes Butler, unless you're maybe an IU fan or another school from a rival team in the conference. It seems like Butler is one of those just likable college basketball schools. You've got that team going up against Michigan State in East Lansing. Obviously, the two schools are close to each other, so a whole lot of the people watching are going to have invested interests in both sides. So if you ask me, if there's a recipe for just a really fun early season college basketball game to watch, you see Butler and Michigan State on the schedule, that's what you think about. A couple of teams who are going to provide you a good afternoon of college basketball, no doubt about it. Next game I want to talk about, the under-the-radar good game, Xavier against Purdue. These are two teams who are supposed to be pretty good, but when you're looking at it from an outsider's perspective, you may be hesitant to think, okay, how good exactly is this game going to be? Purdue, if they get Zach Edey back, is a top contending team. But if they don't, we're looking right now at a team that everyone's thinking is going to take a huge step back. There's going to be a step back for the Boilermakers, but how big is still yet to be decided. And this game against Xavier early in the season, a good team, it could skyrocket either team, whoever wins this game, into a potential top 25 ranking, higher than that if they were already ranked before. And it's just a good signature win to start off your season with for a couple of teams who aren't really exactly sure where their ceiling is right now. It'll be fun to watch how each of them manage an early season test. Next game, best atmosphere in the arena for a game. I've got Iowa at Creighton. We talked about geographical stuff with Michigan State and Butler. That makes that game fun. This geographical rivalry between these two schools is going to be really, really fun when it translates to the atmosphere in Omaha, Nebraska for this game. Creighton is not a fan of the Iowa Hawkeyes or a number of the Big Ten schools that I think, and rightfully so, a whole lot of Creighton fans are getting kind of resentful for teams like Nebraska and Iowa taking the spotlight in the Big Ten, while Creighton just consistently puts out good basketball teams and doesn't seem to get the same kind of recognition or attention in its area. Creighton feels like a little brother. If you're sitting here as a Big Ten fan, Creighton feels like a little brother school. And with a team that's supposed to be really, really good next season and wanting to live up to those expectations, an opportunity to beat a team that you want to beat in Iowa, in a team that looks like it could be beatable after losing a whole lot of good players again this season. You have a team that you know is at very least going to put up a good fight in the Hawkeyes against a team that's supposed to be really, really good in Creighton. I'm interested to see exactly how those two butt heads early in the season, and I'm really, really excited to watch the atmosphere and how loud they can get in Omaha for that game. Because again, good team, one of the first tests of the season, they're going to be excited for it. This one I called the old Big East game that the old head wants, but nobody else is really going to care about. Georgetown against Rutgers. I mean, it is what it is. These are two old Big East teams. If you are a newspaper reader, you'll probably read about it leading up, the history of whatever this matchup is and how many great games they've played against each other. I haven't taken the time to do all that because I know somebody else will. I don't really care all that much about this game. I don't care all that much about the old Big East, to be honest. It's been a while now, and the new Big East seems to be doing just fine. So as far as these old rivalry goes, yeah, it's time to watch some old footage of old guys playing basketball in black and white. But aside from that, I just really need the reminder that, hey, these teams used to be two of the biggest rivalries in the sport. But yeah, not really anymore. The old Big East is the old Big East. But unfortunately, it doesn't carry much weight when it comes to the Gavitt games, at least. Finally, biggest game of their season, question mark, Marquette at Illinois. The Illini aren't projected to be super, super good this season. We'll see what ends up happening with who comes back. Terrence Shannon Jr. still has to make decisions. But right now, Marquette is projected to be one of the best in the country. This is a team that was a Big East champion and has just about everybody coming back on that roster. Obviously, the coaching's there with Shaka Smart. So this is a really, really good Marquette team, facing off against an Illinois team that, let's face it, If it comes to the end of the season, they may very well need a big win to boost their resume. Getting this matchup at home early in the season is a recipe for Illinois to make an upset, and it has the potential to be their biggest home game of the season, conference, non-conference, whatever, if they can make it a good one against the Golden Eagles. Those aren't all the games on the list, and not every Big Ten team is playing in these Gavitt games. Didn't see Indiana's name in any of these lists. We'll talk more about the Gavitt games and all sorts of Big Ten basketball I know soon. But right now, let's finish things up with the Big Ten news that you need to know before we leave you here today. On the baseball fields, Iowa, Indiana, Maryland, and Nebraska have won their first round games in the first 2 days of the Big Ten baseball tournament. Everyone's still in it. It's a double elimination tournament, except for Illinois. Illinois played its loser's bracket game and lost to Michigan, the Illini, the first team eliminated in the Big Ten baseball tournament. In women's tennis, the NCAA individual tournament taking place. Michigan's Kari Miller is on to the quarterfinals in singles. Miller and Jaden Brown are into the quarterfinals as doubles partners, as are Illinois' Katie Duong and Megan Heiser. In football, Michigan State against Penn State has had their game moved to Black Friday and to Ford Field in Detroit. It's part of a big weekend where Detroit has the Lions playing. Now Penn State and Michigan State are going to be playing. And also the MSHAA High School Championships are during that weekend. So they're branding it as this whole big 4 days of football at all levels. And now Penn State, Michigan State gets their name added to that schedule. So that'll be Black Friday at Ford Field. Penn State and Michigan State should be a good game. Finally, in the men's tennis NCAA championship, Ohio State's Andre Styler and Alex Bernard are both on to the individual quarterfinals, as is Michigan's Andrew Fenty. That'll just about do it for Big Ten news here today, as well as for Locked On Big Ten. I'm your host, Nate Dickinson. Coming up next time, we're going to talk about whatever's going on with the Big Ten's media rights deal. Not all the details are sorted out, but I talked to Spencer McLaughlin of Locked On Pac-12 about it on his show. And while we discussed all sorts of stuff with the Pac-12 and the relationship to the Big Ten and what it means for future expansion, we, of course, chatted about everything that's going on with whatever is happening, cleaning up Kevin Warren's mess. That's coming up tomorrow with Spencer here on Locked On Big Ten. Until then, I'm Nate Dickinson. Be sure to follow along wherever you get in your podcasts at Locked On Big Ten. 10 at the end, not T-E-N when you're typing it out. It's the same on YouTube, on Twitter, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Nate Dickinson at Nate with Sports on Twitter. We'll talk to you soon.